You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello and how do, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Marcy Newman. We talk about her divorce. Marcy shares with us her gut-wrenching decision to walk away from a marriage of almost 30 years and why she describes that as a catalyst for change in her life. So before we begin sharing this story, I want to invite you to think about when you think this story took place. Just hold in your mind, like, what you think might have happened. Because one of the very interesting ideas that I have run into in my many, many discussions with people about their families and about marriage and divorce and step-parenting and blending families and all of that stuff is this concept of these things being a modern problem. So hold on to that and see if your idea matches what you hear. Now, if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Let's do this. Marcy Newman, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I sure am, Amy, and thanks so much for having me.
You are so welcome. I start all my interviews by asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So where are you these days?
I'm in Gainesville, Florida.
Oh, I'm also in Florida. You didn't know that, probably.
No, I didn't.
I am in Miami.
So okay.
That's great. Where I am. I've spent a little bit of time in Gainesville. One of the kids went to the University of Florida. So that is, I have been there.
Well, it's a great place. I've been here now for a couple of years and I'm so happy here.
Fantastic. All right. In a second, we're going to get to the official topic, which is not Gainesville, Florida. But I have one more warm-up question, which is, there is the saying that laughter is the very best medicine. So would you share with us something that you can count on to make you smile or laugh?
Yeah, for sure. So I think one of the best things for me or easiest things for me is to watch funny movies. I gravitate towards them and I love to laugh. So I also do improv. And a lot of the times I'll just go to improv just to sit and listen to everybody. The best thing is to be able to make fun of yourself without any hesitation whatsoever. And so, yeah, just being in an improv situation, which you see a lot in the movies also, yeah. It's just the best.
I love that answer. I love it. So now when you go to improv,
yeah.
Are you in the audience or do you participate? Are you in there doing the skits with the people? Like what is your level here?
Both. So I love going as a spectator, but I also love doing improv. And I actually started to do improv a number of years ago when I realized that I was in a slump and I really needed to elevate my energy. And so I started to go to improv. And I'll tell you, it's become such an integral part of my life that no matter where I move, and in the past 10 years, I've moved quite a bit, I first check to see if there's an improv group. Because I know that it enhances my life and I'll be a happy girl.
That is amazing. All right. So very good. Okay. The topic of the day, not improv, although I probably could talk to you about that all day long. We are going to talk about you making the decision to leave behind an almost 30-year marriage. So I want to start by setting the time frame. Will you share with us how long ago it was that you made this decision?
Yeah, actually in 2003. So it's been over 20 years.
All right. So that is really good because you've got some distance and some time. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great asset for talking about this. So I'm going to back way up then, because in my experience, when I talk to people about stories about breakups and divorces, that story actually starts with falling in love and getting together. And so I was wondering if we could walk it all the way back and you wouldn't mind sharing with us how you met your husband.
Oh my God, I haven't been asked that in such a long time. It's fantastic. So yes, so we were the typical medical student, nursing student who used to meet in the stairwells of the hospital. And
Grey's Anatomy story.
Exactly. It's a Grey's Anatomy story. Yeah, we met in the hospital on one of the wards, and This is the funniest thing. I actually met my husband as he was sitting on my cousin's lap getting a back rub. And he said, "You're next." And I just looked at him and I said, "There is not a chance in hell." And I walked away. And from there, it just became sort of a cat and mouse game. And yeah, we ended up getting married and yeah, being together for almost 30 years.
All right, very good. So how long? So then he's a doctor and you're a nurse in
Yes.
this story. Okay, so I didn't want to assume. I didn't want to assume
Yeah,
and just
nope.
go forward with that. So how long did you guys date or court or go together or whatever the words were that you guys used in your relationship? How long did you do that before you got married?
About 2 years.
2 years, nice long pre-relationship. And then thinking back to that time when you were starting this life together and getting married, what do you remember as your own personal vision for the life that you guys were building together? What did you think your life would look like?
To tell you the truth, I mean, it's hard to go back to that time frame, especially looking through the eyes that I'm looking through now. But I think it was like anyone else. I really believed that we would have a long and happy life. The home, the kids, the white picket fence, the dog, the this, the that. And also, I had a sense that it would be a very exciting life. And I was right. We did a lot of traveling, had a lot of really wonderful things that took place in our lives, and it was exciting on many levels. In fact, I'm going to say it was really the envy of a lot of people that we know.
Okay, no, I love that. I think that that's very good because when we go through transitions, it's very easy to, specifically really big transitions, it's very easy to only see that one snapshot in time and to forget about all the things that may have happened that were good.
That's right.
And throwing out the baby with the bathwater as it was. So, when looking back from where you are today, which is hard, and I acknowledge that. Right. But the great thing about giving people advice is if you can catch them before they repeat the patterns, right? So that's why I ask all these questions about the early stage of these things. At what point do you remember thinking that, or it becoming apparent that you were thinking about separation or divorce? When did that start in the relationship?
Yeah, there was actually a very, there were a couple of very pivotal points for me. And that was around our 19th year anniversary. And what happened was I recognized that I was so alone in my marriage that we had 4 kids, very, very busy lives, our kids, involved in many different things. But I was feeling so alone. And I remember our anniversary was always around the time of the tennis matches around Labor Day. And so I had wanted this anniversary to be different because I was feeling so vulnerable. And my husband came home and said that he had tickets to go with his friend to the tennis matches on our anniversary. And I said to him, "Look, I'd really, appreciate it if you would just give those to somebody else. I really need to be with you." And he said, "Well, I can't tell him at the last minute that I can't go to the open." And it was in that moment I had this feeling of like dread that, okay, something is really, really wrong here. And the second time that I had this knowingness that there was just no going back was actually about 6 years later. And by the way, I want to say that in that 6 years, you have never seen anybody work so hard to try to keep a marriage together. But as I said, it was so clear to me, I was so alone in the marriage. And I wanted to go for marriage counseling. My husband refused. I tried an ultimatum. I made the appointment. He didn't show up. And so there were many things that came up to this one point, but it was an epiphany that stopped me dead in my tracks. And we were actually celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary. And we were out in Montana at my niece's wedding. And all of our kids came. They had created this beautiful memory book for us, presented it. We were with the whole family. And all I kept feeling was like this knot in my stomach. And I'm looking at the memory book and looking at our lives through their eyes, right?
Yeah.
And all the things that they thought would be really important for us to see. And I noticed this sense of emptiness. And what happened was we were at a party, and I'd always had this really strong affinity for the Native American. And I look out into the backyard, and here is an authentic teepee. So as soon as the party moved to the indoors, I just waited until I had my chance. And I sort of snuck out of the party, went back into this teepee. And I remember going inside and really feeling like I was having a cosmic experience. Like, I pulled back that ceiling flap and the night sky started to fill it up. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I decided to lay down on the rugs. And I was, thinking about our lives and thinking about how idyllic my life was. I had anything and everything anyone could ever want. Lots of travel, vacation homes, jewelry, cars, you name it, very affluent lifestyle. And I was actually so grateful. And I remember thinking, I'm so grateful for all of this. And I'm telling you, Amy, like a ticker tape across my mind's eye, it says, how much longer do I have to do this, Lord?
Oh, so fatigue and a desire to not keep doing what you're doing.
Yep. And I'll tell you, I bolted upright. I broke out into a sweat and I jumped out of the teepee and I vomited in the bushes.
Wow. Okay. That's sort of a representation. Sometimes people will say to me in conversations many, many times, or not just on the podcast, but over the years, when you're talking about like signs and conversations from ourselves, it's like, it's like sometimes they're gentle nudges and other times they're a 2x4 to the forehead. And sitting up and vomiting in the bushes is a pretty strong sign.
Exactly. And I remember feeling, Amy, it was like you talk about this sense of dread. It stopped me dead in my tracks. I remember standing there, still having this feeling that like I wanted to retch, but I also had this guilt and shame come over me. Like, who are you, you biatch? You have everything, right? Everybody's envious of you. And you're saying you want more? What more could there be? Well, the whole weekend long, I noticed I couldn't look anyone in the eyes. I was so afraid that they could read my thoughts and see that I was thinking these awful things. And it was, of course, nearly impossible for me to celebrate that weekend. But I went back to Long Island, which was where I was living at the time. And I, did what I do best. And I just started sweeping it under the rug, pretending it didn't happen. But it was relentless, absolutely relentless. And what happened was in the following year, it became so impossible for me to deny this any longer that I actually started to become physically ill. And I remember saying to one of my friends, I feel not only do I feel like my body is dying physically, I feel like my spirit is dying. And I, had always been connected spiritually, metaphysically. I'm a metaphysical teacher. And I couldn't connect with myself. And I'd also started to experience these physical symptoms. We'd go out to dinner. I wouldn't be able to get up out of my seat. My hips hurt so badly. I had digestive issues, never left the house without Tums. I had constant headaches. And then what started to happen is I remember being on the Long Island Expressway and losing my peripheral vision. And I said, okay, I've got a brain tumor. Like something is happening here. And I remember making an appointment to see a neurologist who was a friend of ours. And in the meantime, this is so interesting. About a year before that, I had had a reading with a psychic. And she had given me the name of a therapist who worked with women in transition. And at the time, I looked at it and said, I don't need this. I'm not in
Right.
transition. I threw it in a drawer. Well, don't you know that that card was still there? So I made an appointment to see her and I started to work with her. And what came up before very long was number one, how unhappy I was in my marriage, that it wasn't just my life, I was unhappy in my marriage. And the other thing that came up was that for a couple of years, I had been experiencing these recurrent nightmares. And they would wake me in the middle of the night. My heart would be pounding. I'd break out into a sweat. And the theme was always I couldn't find my wedding ring.
Oh, okay. That's a sign. That's
Can you
amazing.
imagine my shock when the therapist said to me, first off, Marcy, that's not a recurrent nightmare. That's called a panic attack. And you are wound up so tightly that you can't even allow yourself to have a panic attack during the day like normal people do.
Interesting. All right, so I have a couple of clarifying questions because this is the first time you and I talk. You were at this point, you even though you were a traditionally Western trained nurse, I think you were already a student of spirituality and metaphysical stuff, or did that happen after?
So I actually had been ordained as a spiritualist minister in
Okay.
1974.
Okay, so this is a
So
lifelong
this was a
interest.
lifetime of really being in the arts.
Okay,
The
all right.
healing arts.
The healing arts. Okay, that was very good. The other thing I wanted to double click on before we go deeper into this, because this is a recurring theme when I talk to people about relationships, is the sensation of feeling alone, even though you are actually in a family. So I want to see if you can talk a little bit more about that, because my thing is you probably weren't actually alone a lot of the time. You were feeling alone, even though people were around.
So, I felt connected to my kids. I loved being their mom.
But they were older at this point.
When
Yeah.
I
Okay.
left, my kids were older. My
Yeah.
youngest was 15.
Okay.
So I loved being connected with them and very involved in their lives. But with my husband, I always felt disconnected. In other words, I would be listening to him talk, for instance, and I could feel myself shrinking, like moving further and further away. I experienced this feeling where, and actually it was more than a feeling, because I remember even saying to him when I first started to feel this, I feel like we're not in the same chapter here. We're not
Yeah.
on the same page. And he would laugh. And then it became so not on the same page to the same chapter. Then it was, we're not in the same book.
Yeah.
Then it was, we're not in the same world.
Yeah.
And what also was happening was I was getting all of this reflected back to me from other people. So my husband had a pretty strong personality, and he was head of his department at the hospital. And we'd be at, like a medical dinner or something, and people would come up to me. And the first thing that they would do was like look me up and down, like looking for something wrong with me. And then they would talk to me very gingerly. And then it became a joke. One fellow I remember like turned me around. He said, I'm looking for your angel wings. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you have to be an angel, he said, to be able to, deal with that guy, kind of a thing. And I remember feeling this sense of embarrassment, but also a certain sense of puffed up pride, you might say,
That you could do it. It was hard.
that I could do it. I was superwoman, right?
Yeah.
So I could do it. And what I noticed as time progressed and I became more and more aware of myself with working with this therapist was that there was so much that I created around me so that I didn't have to interact with him. so that it remained on a superficial level. Because, so in my world, we talk about energy resonance, right? We were not resonating on any level. And it became almost to the point where, there'd be times the hair on the back of my neck would stand up. And I knew, as that was revealing itself, that it was either I stay there and continue to try to shrink down as much as possible, or literally save myself. And thank God I chose to save myself.
All right, very good. So now I'm going to zoom way out again, even further than before. I want to take a second and talk about some bigger sort of general concepts and ideas about marriage. When you think back to you as a young kid and your family of origin and your community of origin when you were growing up, what do you remember about the programming and the messaging that you received and internalized about marriage and success as a woman and family?
My parents had a very happy marriage, and a very good relationship, but I came from a large family. There were eight children. I was the eldest daughter.
So you represent the stereotype of the oldest daughter who is
You got it.
high-functioning. Yeah, okay.
You got it. And
Sometimes those come from true stories.
not only was I responsible for, five younger siblings, but I always remembered shrinking down to make other people comfortable, because it seemed like whatever I asked for was always too much. They always said, you ask so many questions. And I remember my aunt saying, "You're so precocious, people have trouble, dealing with you." And so that was the programming that I grew up with. It was, you have to shrink down so that people aren't irritated by you, number one. Number two, don't ask so many questions. And number three, if what you're asking for is too much, better to not ask. And so that was really a theme in my marriage. I couldn't even ask my husband to make me a cup of tea.
Yes, and one of the reasons that I would feel like I was called to begin to share these stories and do all of these things is that we have, as people who are humans who are in the process of raising other humans, you want the future generations. We want our ceiling to be their floor. We want to change things so that the children we raise and the generations that come after us have a different experience. And
That's
yet,
right.
this is something that while many, many things have changed, it's still a story that we hear today. And so that it's, I think it's fascinating to talk to people over generations and hear certain things. So we think that once we deal with it ourselves, like, okay, it should never happen again. Fixed. Generational cycle broken. Done. That's not how it's playing out, as it turns out, unfortunately. So you describe the decision, to walk away from your marriage as gut-wrenching, but you also say that making the decision was the catalyst for change in your life. So I'd love for you to say more about that. What about this decision at the time? And obviously, it's been 2 decades, but what was it about it that maybe felt scary or hard, or
Oh
I
my
think you
word.
shameful? I think you felt like you were feeling guilt and shame. What was that about? What did that feel like? Talk about that.
Okay. So even the thought of it, I knew my husband had a certain personality, right? And I knew that this was not going to be an easy task. And the truth of the matter is that I had brought up leaving a couple of times before that, where things were just intolerable. And the level of threats that I got were actually life-threatening. And so that was certainly part of it. The other part of it was, I had four kids, right? And as I said, my husband is like very well known in the community. I was very well known in the community. And I remember like wondering, who am I going to be, right? If I'm not Mrs. so and so, if I'm not Mrs. Doctor, if I'm not this, if I'm not that, who am I going to be? But the other part of it was that I knew that I had to be prepared to walk away with essentially nothing.
We're talking about finances and assets and
And I knew that it would be a very difficult situation. And true to my fears. The moment that I said to my husband, I want a divorce, within 5 seconds out of his mouth, he just turned to me and said, I will destroy you.
Wow. All right. Very good. Before we talk about that story, I want to talk about one other thing, which is that because you mentioned it before, you talked about that somebody had handed you a card for somebody who helped women in transition. And when, even though you had been experiencing these very, very significant moments in your life and feeling alone in your marriage and spiritual, you were a spiritual person who's studying these, you still had the sensation or the awareness in the moment that you're like, that's not me. I'm not actually in transition. Do you have any reflective thoughts about like why it was so, you were so resistant to seeing that in your own life?
And most of it revolved around my children.
Okay.
I couldn't imagine destroying their lives, and I
Yeah.
knew that it would. And so every time that I would come close, it was always my kids and their well-being that brought me back. And the other part of it was also that in the family that I grew up in, the community, I mean, divorce wasn't really an option. I, in fact, knew maybe a handful of people in my youth who had ever been divorced. And they were looked upon as, something was wrong with them. So this clearly had an impact on my drive to keep this all together. But I think the other part of it was also to admit to myself that I had to give this up.
Yeah. It's almost a version of self, what they call sunk cost fallacy. Like you've spent all this time building this up. Like, how can I possibly walk away? Like, yeah.
And it's also what I call the hope hook.
Sure.
It just keeps like reeling you in. You keep hoping, well, if I'm this, if I'm that,
Yes.
if I can change, or I can do this, if I do more of that, if, well, maybe when they're off to college, or, it's all of these hopes that keep coming up that are connected to those original dreams that you spoke of, right?
Yes.
So you have to be able to give up the dream of whatever it was, and it's always based on some fantasy that, makes you the heroine, right, in the
Yes.
story. So you have to give that up, and that's the hardest thing because I had to come to the point, and this was so powerful, Amy. Oh my God. My therapist said to me one day, because I was lamenting, I could just feel, everybody's angst over what was happening. And she said, you have to be able or have to be willing to risk it all to have it all.
Right. The one of the things, and this is not just divorce. This is like a negotiation thing. If you ever take a lesson about how to negotiate, the most powerful person at the table is the person who's willing to walk away. And you think it's the person who like has the biggest incentive or the best offer, but the person who has often the most power is the person who's like, yeah, I don't. It doesn't matter. I'm walking away. Like this is
That's
not
right.
like I'm willing to walk away. But. And that sounds beautiful and easy and simple, but when you're talking about your life, walking away is hard.
And your
It's really,
children's lives.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So divorce is a very complicated process. You guys were married almost 30 years. It's not fast. It's not easy. But there is often, and you, I think you gave us at the beginning of this story, there is often a moment or a day or a conversation, which is the moment of shifting between this is an idea and this is what I'm doing. So how, what were the steps? How did this actually happen? I know you had one conversation where he said, I will destroy you, but walk us through a little bit about the actual process of making the decision and putting it into action, like this relationship is over.
So for me, it was narrowing down my community,
Okay.
narrowing down my activities. I started to really sort of fold into myself and make certain that I was surrounded by only those who I felt would be there for me. And by the way, that did not include my best friend.
Yeah.
And what also happened was, in this process of working with this therapist and being so willing to look at myself and see the aspects of myself that were really complicating all of this, right? And being willing to let those go, being willing to lay on the floor of her office and just sob my heart out. I mean, those are things we have to be willing to do, and you have to be willing, and I think this is the hardest thing. You have to be willing to disappoint people.
Okay,
You have to be willing. When you walk away, no one's going to be happy for you. And so the willingness to disappoint people, including your family, for me anyway, that was one of the biggest things because I had a position in my family and my community. And you're going to laugh when I tell you this, but people used to come to us for marriage advice.
Well, I think that that is a really interesting thing to talk about because you mentioned it before that you had a very, from outward appearances, you had a beautiful life and there were parts of it you really enjoyed, affluent and so on. There is a thing that comes up over and over again, not just in transition stories about marriage, but transition stories in all other things, which is the really, really different way that other people see our experiences and the way we ourselves are experiencing them. And how hard it makes it to then make change. The pressure of our perception of how other people see us, it's real. It's real. So you would say that the people who knew you guys and knew your family, they were not aware of what you were going through at home.
Not even the people in our office that we worked with.
Yeah. So,
Everyone
yeah.
was shocked,
Everyone was
completely
shocked.
shocked.
So, all right. So you mentioned that your best friend was not in support of this when you finally started to do this. What were the reactions, some of the other reactions from family and friends as you began to move through this? What did what happened?
So this is interesting. A lot of people wanted to know why.
Sure.
And I have to tell you, Amy, that there were parts of me I didn't know why.
Okay.
Like I almost couldn't articulate it. All I knew was that I was saving myself. And I knew that there was something drastically wrong with who I was in this marriage and who I was in this world that I'd created because. Frankly, there was actually very little of the authentic me in it. I had done such a marvelous job, and I actually say I'm quite masterful at creating this illusion of a life and being what everybody else wanted and needed me to be. And in that process, losing myself, and yet she was very aware of what was going on. So I remember like having actual, internal conversation where I was battling myself because, the ego wants you to believe that there's something wrong with you, that you can't do this. And the ego wants you to believe that, you'll never survive this. You'll never, ever survive this. And so, coming to grips with the fact that I was the one responsible for my life, and I was the one who was going to be creating a new one. I had to be willing to let people believe whatever they wanted to believe. And you can't even imagine the stories that were going on all around me because, frankly, I couldn't give them an answer. I couldn't give them an answer that would satisfy each of them. There was no general answer. It was just, I have to do this for me.
And
So
so,
I
and
became, but I became that person,
I think that it's really interesting because I want to give you the chance to reflect on this to the audience. You loved being the mother of your children and being in their life. So I'm going to guess that you don't regret
Not at
investing
all.
that time. And
No.
at the same time, you were making a decision to be a person and in an identity that actually didn't quite fit.
Right.
And those two things are happening at the same time. And I think that's confusing to experience. And I think that it's interesting. And I think that that is, I think that even though we talk about it a lot, we are not talking about it quite enough because it happens over and over again, and it's a topic that comes up more and more, at least in my life. But I talk to a lot of people, so maybe that's just me. All right, so you surprise all the people. Okay, so you move through this, you get you separate. You build a new life for yourself. We're going to fast forward, and we're going to I want you to tell people what you do today and what your life is like today.
Yeah. So I'm known as the Heart Shift Coach, and I help women to cultivate the courage that it takes to create and live a self-love lifestyle. And I do that because I know that that's what it took for me. It was all about cultivating that courage, getting up the to that place where I recognized that this was the most important thing that I was going to do for my entire life.
Yeah.
And what happened was, this tiny little picture that I had of what my life would be like after I left my marriage and my home, my community, my job, my friends, family. I left everything nearly that had defined me for almost 30 years. I imagined myself just sort of crawling into a corner someplace and living this small life. And instead, it was as if the universe laid itself at my feet and all these doors started like opening up for me. And I started actually a podcast. I opened up my private practice. I mean, there were so many things. And then what happened is I started a manufacturing company. And
Really?
yes, I did.
What do you manufacture? I love
I
this.
manufactured law of attraction products.
Okay.
And these were visions that came to me in my dreams. And I would wake up in the middle of the night writing everything down as fast as could be. Now, we didn't really talk too much about my background, but my background is I was a registered nurse, a spiritualist minister. So
Those
I,
two things are
my
different universes.
different universes, but nowhere in there was business, nowhere in there was product development,
Right.
nothing. But I saw these things in complete detail, and I had no idea how to even send an email. I opened an office. I hired someone who had a very strong business background to assist me. She taught me how to send emails. Then we just started to put all these pieces together in the way that I had seen them. And this is nothing short of a miracle. But within 8 weeks, I had six products on the market and had started to win international awards for new products on the market.
What? That's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome. Oh my
Yes.
gosh.
Yeah. And I have this robust private practice because everybody wants to talk to me. I also was a Reiki master. And so I created this brand new form of Reiki. So I was teaching that. So here I am. I'm traveling all around the country, all around the world with these products. I'm speaking at all these new age, conferences and selling my products. I had school systems that were calling me. One school system wanted 1,000 of my vision board kits because they wanted to do a project with the seniors of their high schools. And
Okay.
so all of this started to grow in ways I could have never, ever imagined. And what happened? I became me
Okay.
unapologetically. All full of myself, me.
Yeah, just very truly and honestly, you.
Me.
Yeah. That's really, really beautiful. I love the story about that you didn't know how to send an email because I once worked in an office with somebody who it was a tech company, and I was young, and all of my coworkers n were very young and tech able. But we hired somebody, and the person came in, and they had no idea how to use an email, and so they would. Their secretary would print out the emails, bring them into the office. They would write the response on it, and then the person would write, go in and type it back. And I still remember hearing about that and being like, "What? Are you for real with this?" And I'm sure they learned because it's not a complicated thing. But I do actually remember that, and I think the thing is, like, I tell it as a funny story for somebody else, but the actual thing is that those things feel like barriers, but they're not. It's the confidence that we can learn these things and do things, and that when you walk through one door, then you see the next one and it opens up. All
And
right, so yeah.
you can't even imagine what's beyond that door.
Yeah.
And for me, I mean, I haven't stopped living like that ever since I left my marriage. That's exactly what happens to me every single day.
It's a beautiful story. I'm thankful for you sharing it. You have a very special offer for the audience that I'm going to share, which is a product called How to Shift from Self-Sabotage to Self-Love in 5 days.
Right.
It's a powerful practical guide to help you shift from destructive patterns into the energy of real and lasting self-love. Normally the value is $29, but it's available as a free download. There's a link and a code in the show notes wherever you're listening or watching the podcast. And the very easiest way for all the people who are watching and listening to the podcast to get these links is almost always to be a part of the Imperfect Adulting email list, because then I zap it right into your email. You can click on it and redeem the code very easily. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. So I always recommend that. All right, Marcy, are you ready for the final fun questions?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Will you share with me what is your favorite color?
Green.
Green. All right. What is something that you are looking forward to in your own personal life, learning something, doing something, anything like that, something in the future that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm starting a new program for children. And
Beautiful.
yeah, the program is teaching them all about their energetic self. And helping them to build the confidence and the knowingness that only that can bring. You know, they each have superpowers. And so as they become more and more connected to those, they'll be full, become a full expression of them as well.
I love that. And there's a phase of your life when you're very small where you're pretty sure you have superpowers, and then somehow that when you get older, like we begin to like make fun of it, and it's like, oh no, yeah, I don't have that. So I love that. All right, name a household chore that you absolutely hate, and if you had the choice to give it up forever and ever, you would.
Emptying the dishwasher.
I love it. Right? That's the joke. It's like you either love. It's like oh. You either love it or you hate it. There's somebody in the house. That's it, Marcy Newman. Thank you so much for being a wonderful
Thank you,
guest.
Amy. This has been great. I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.